And speaking of other worlds, we are joined now in the studio by Scott Washington, historian extraordinaire, for another round of History Matters, taking a look back at this week in history, because as hard as it may be to believe after the last 4 days, stuff actually happened prior to this week as well.
Yes. Yes, but you know, when I hear that music, I always feel like, yes, there is going to be sense now made of things.
At least for the next 20 minutes, and then it's back to chaos all over again.
But it's interesting how we see these moments in history happen to come, and that they seem to be, there seems to be tides and ebbs in what develops. Like, for instance, Monday, August 20th is when President Johnson, not Lyndon Johnson, but the one from Civil War, President Johnson, who in 18...
The bad one.
Well, I don't know about that. But he... And
between the two Johnsons, it's kind of a toss-up.
Takes him to 1866, and President Johnson declares the Civil War over. Now, the irony of this was not entirely lost on me, given what's occurred here. That has become national, international news. Mm-hmm. One of the best suggestions I heard was, let's put up more statues instead of one like an art museum. Yeah. Let's put up more.
That's what the Historical Commission suggested in Raleigh. Like,
right.
We've got these three Confederate statues. Like, we've got a lot of Confederate statues on the state Capitol grounds. Maybe there should be other things as well. So let's put up
another
one.
Like, if you go to an art museum, you say, I like that one. I hate this one. Mm-hmm. And so there is some...
What you said at the very beginning, I think, is worth bringing back and emphasizing. Like, history is about ebbs and flows and times of crisis and times of tension and times relative kind of peace and pacificity.
And there's change.
And there's constant change, but it's more and less contentious and intense from time to time. And whenever we have kind of moments like this where there is a lot of tension and a lot of uncertainty, can't take our feet off the gas in terms of moving forward towards progress and change and justice and making things better, but also kind of keep in mind that things do calm down. Again, sometimes for better and sometimes for worse, but we are going to get to that period of calm sooner or later.
That's right. Well, even in 1858, on August 21st, when the future president, Abraham Lincoln, was in a debate with Stephen Douglas, he declared, this government cannot endure permanently half slave and half free. And we think that this is the only time when we've had controversy. And we just have to look back, and it's part of life. But I think of how Mitch Landrieu, the former mayor of New Orleans, and they have Confederate monuments there, and yet they went through the process. And when he was asked about this, when he visited Durham recently, and the Confederate statue had been pulled down, Mitch was very forthright. He said, no, we need to follow the process. He said, in our case, it went through numerous court challenges, 2 or 3 years, and yet it finally wasn't people who pulled things down. Mm-hmm. It was the law. And I think there's some value to that.
I mean, that would certainly be better. I mean, it's one thing to say, like, a 2 to 3 year process that ends in the statue being pulled down. The Silent Sam fight was 50 years.
Right.
Like, at a certain point.
That's right. That's exactly right. And I think that's I think we can appreciate the frustration.
Yeah.
And, but there, it's not over yet. And hopefully we can still see these moments as teaching moments where we can keep learning about these great moments in history that we say it's not just today, this has this antecedence in other times. And I think that's kind of important. However, Monday the 20th is also when here's a local connection, going back to 1775, the Third Provincial Congress met in Hillsborough. Now, there were five of these in North Carolina, and North Carolina has really the distinction. The first two were in New Bern. But the first one that was held from August 20th to the 27th in 1774 was the first gathering anywhere in the 13 colonies held in defiance of British orders.
Awesome.
Now, I just think that's an amazing thing. And then the second one was held in April, that spring of 1775. Mm-hmm. And then the third one was August 20th to September 10th in 1775.
Why were they so short? Were they just sort of temporarily created?
Well,
or?
Again, you know, this was a movement where people were going from what was established instead of saying, oh, we want to see that you can change or adapt the existing system, to finally saying, you know what, we're going to have to do something different. Mm-hmm. And out of that is what slowly emerges over time, the North Carolina Constitution, its Declaration of Rights. It wasn't overnight. People didn't think of themselves as we are totally in revolt. It was simply a matter of realizing in a shift where people were thinking of themselves as British colonists and Great Britain was not listening to what they were saying. They were getting not the representation that they wanted, to suddenly realizing we may have to do things differently. Mm-hmm. We may have to. And, of course, the attempt to try to stop people from meeting is what caused people to meet.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that, and, of course, we have the Halifax Resolves comes out of when they meet in Halifax. That's another one of the provincial congresses. And, again, we say, well, why did they meet in all these different places? And it's because there was not a fixed capital at that point. Again, that takes more time. It takes to 1792 when the area that we now call Raleigh and the state capital, that's the area that's chosen as a result of that 1788 constitutional conference held in Hillsborough. But Hillsborough has a real connection here with important history that occurs in Hillsborough. And, of course, Hillsborough, there was no Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill. There was Hillsborough. And part of the reason why Hillsborough was so attractive was because it wasn't the more western part of the state, and there were taverns, and there was a racetrack. So that was also, well, that's a good reason to travel a long distance. We're going to stay there, and we're going to...
Yeah, forget the good universities and the RTP and all the job
right.
opportunities
no,
and the high-tech
no.
and Google
that's right.
Google coming in with the fiber. No,
yeah.
racetracks
that's
and
right.
bars. That's
and
gonna...
it was before planting. That had already been done. The roads were dry. There wasn't any mud, you know. Those were actually important considerations, but they weren't long. They were long enough and where they could do the things that needed to be done. But, you know, it's important to realize that people got together and said, we've got a problem. Let's see what we can do to solve it. And they did. And many of those
while
people...
While the DJ were, revolved it.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
Well, many of those people were involved all through the Revolutionary War and then through the Constitutional Convention, too. So sometimes when people feel strongly that people are for and against, sometimes there is common ground that can be found. And that's what you always aim for.
Also kind of a really interesting kind of local fact that I think kind of flies under the radar. Hillsborough was first. Like, you think about Durham and Chapel Hill and Raleigh
right.
as being these, especially in the case of Raleigh and Durham, like
yes.
these huge cities that have grown up and continue to grow. Hillsborough, just tiny Hillsborough out in the very edge of the triangle. Like
right.
that was the foundation. That
oh,
was
yeah.
the cornerstone.
Well, as all these settlers came in from up north and flowed in and as Orange County was formed, which is approximately 12 counties back then, they first had the thought the capital would be in Haw River for this county. It was too far out, so that's when they made Hillsborough plan capital in 1754. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing is, even this is how history impacts us today. Here we are, you know, 250 plus years later, and where do you go to do your county business? Hillsborough.
Yep.
6,000 people. And you think, why not Chapel Hill? 186,000 people. No, that's the tradition that developed, and it just continues today,
yep.
which is kind of interesting.
Scott Washington here from for History Matters, and we're kind of talking about the history of ebbs and flows of
yes.
tension and relative calm and peace. So we've got to talk about this because we always do. We never miss the opportunity whenever this comes up on a week in history. But the fact that, you know, sometimes you get a group of people together and they're upset about something and they're not
yes.
getting movement from the powers that be,
right.
so they take it upon themselves to do something on Monday, pulling
right.
the statue down in 1784, literally seceding from the state of North Carolina and forming a state that eventually
yes.
kind of did become its own state,
yes.
sort of kind of
oh
in a roundabout way.
Well, you know, back in colonial times, like by 1788, North Carolina extended all the way from the Atlantic to the Mississippi, mm-hmm. encompassing what is all today Tennessee. But in 1784, the people passed the Appalachians there, said they were not getting a great enough representation, took matters into their own hands, and formed the state of Franklin. They even appealed to Ben Franklin to say, in honor of you, and Ben Franklin wanted nothing to do with it. It did not get the necessary two-thirds votes, and 4 years later, when Congress said no to it, then the land was, North Carolina got it back, but at that point, North Carolina then ceded it to the federal government, slapped the wrist of John Sevier, who was the governor of this fledgling little state, and turned around and made him the governor of this new state, Tennessee. Yeah. Now, the interesting thing is, part of it was they also had no currency, and so the people in Philadelphia said, well, what are you doing? They said, well,
why do you think we wrote to Ben Franklin in the first place?
That's what I think Ben Franklin said, no. I'm not going to even serve you a state that doesn't have a currency. It just trades furs. No.
P.S. Please send money. I need spending money to get through the week.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a great case of, and the best thing that came out of that was the negotiations that the people in Franklin, this fledgling little state, did with the Cherokee, and it allowed a peaceful expansion into Tennessee, which was a really good thing. So it shows you that things will work out.
This is another good example. Like we think about the state of Franklin as being this kind of wacky Appalachians from 1784 to 1788. They have this crazy movement, and it goes nowhere.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't go nowhere. They secede, the secession gets rejected, they get folded back into North Carolina, but the grievances exist, and they continue to exist, and eventually, they do eventually get their own state.
Say, you know what, the distance is too great to travel from that part. That really should be a separate state.
Yeah, Wilmington to Memphis is a long drive.
Yeah, a long drive.
Especially in 1788.
Great music, but a long drive.
They didn't have a radio that you could listen to on the way. You'd have to sing on your own.
Hey, I'm so glad you mentioned that because of being a world radio day.
I know my segue.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That was perfect. And no better than I can think of, you know, that's 1920, a first radio station goes on the air. But here's WCHL with a long established pedigree for being one of the nation's great community radio stations. But now we think of community being worldwide because you can also get it on, of course, chapelboro.com, which is a great thing.
So go back. Your reference there, first commercial radio station in 1920. So we're not even to 100 years of commercial radio.
And it
wasn't
even four letters. It was just three, WWJ of Detroit.
Well, the really good Detroit radio stations, like the great AM stations, I think they pretty much all still are. There's WJR is the main one in Detroit. That we listened to growing up in Lansing when we wanted to listen to Tigers games. We'd turn on 760 AM and get the really grainy audio from 90 miles away.
Well, do people say, hey, have you been listening to CHL? I mean, do they do that?
I mean, yeah, they do. Yeah. But we've got the W in front.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, we should mention that this week also, August 24th, 1718, the city of New Orleans founded 300th anniversary. So that's something that's I'm sure they're going to be celebrating, but we need to
know. That would be a good day to be in New Orleans, wouldn't
it? Yes, I think it would.
You've got connections,
That's right. Well, also on August 24th, The Wizard of Oz movie was released. Can you imagine that? I remember, and I don't know how I missed it, but we didn't have color TV or something. But it wasn't until I'm in college and I've heard this story about Wizard of Oz in color. Always missed it. Somehow just never had the right conversation with somebody. Finally, heard about it playing at a movie house. So I went down and I said, is this the one in color? And they said, yes. And I settled into my seat with my pop. And it comes on, it's in sepia. And I was so disappointed. I went, oh, you've got to be kidding. And then when it switches to Oz, I must have just been like the audience of 1939.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my goodness. So
there are those moments in early movie history where we go back and we look at those movies today and we don't have the reaction that the original audiences yes, did. Like
exactly.
When the Great Train Robbery comes out in 1905 or whatever that was, and the guy at the end points his gun at the camera and fires, and people apparently like gasped and jumped and ran out of their seats. And when Safety Last was made and Harold Lloyd is climbing that building, like people are fleeing the theater in terror. And The Wizard of Oz, when you see like color on screen for the first time, like that's an amazing moment.
Amazing. And you know, and this is also the week, August 24th, 1891, when Thomas Edison applied for a patent for a motion picture camera.
What's the last movie? And it might be a while ago, it might be recent, I don't know. I have to think about this, but what's the last movie where you see something on screen and it just made you go, wow? Like a visual or a special effect or something like that. Because now we're so used to CGI and the fact that you could do literally anything.
That's right.
It's a lot more difficult to wow an audience.
Well, I think Jurassic Park.
That was the one that I was thinking of when they around the corner and you see the dinosaurs.
Exactly. That was truly amazing. And
there are some moments in Lord of the Rings.
Right. 2012 had some spectacular disaster sequences that were.
Gravity was good when Sandra Bullock and George Clooney are out in outer space. Like,
I think we could segue into a whole other sequence.
But really, Jurassic Park was the first one that I thought of too, where they're going around the corner and Sam Neill and Laura Dern like stand up and you don't know what they're looking at first, and then the camera turns around and you see the huge dinosaurs for the first time.
Yeah.
Like that's a moment.
That's right.
Like you don't get that very often.
I remember when Airplane came out. Now that would date me, but when it first came out in the theater.
You dated yourself with watching The Wizard of Oz in color for the first time.
And so Airplane comes on and the audience is there like, okay, maybe we'll laugh at this. Uh-huh. And then the joke started. And you could just see the audience just start exploding, like, oh, this is the funniest thing we've ever seen, which is a great, great thing. So it's fun to be there for those kind of great moments. But, you know, with Edison, the reason he was able to apply for this patent is because of George Eastman, who had now I'm going to bring it back to North Carolina because he actually had an estate here in North Carolina that he went to a second home down near Halifax. And George Eastman, of course, is the guy who develops film, and he does it on paper at first. It rips, it tears. Finally, he hears about celluloid, but how to run it through. Okay, well, that's how sprocket holes. That's when Thomas Edison, it clicks, and he goes, sprocket holes. Oh, yeah, then we could control how many shots those pictures, and then it would give the illusion of motion pictures. Mm-hmm. So there's a Carolina connection with Thomas Edison in the movies.
Not to mention, this is the week that Dirty Dancing comes out in theaters.
Oh, my
filmed
gosh.
In Lake Lure or based on Lake Lure?
Lake Lure and also Mountain Lake in Virginia. And that's where you see many of the establishing shots, which is this big lake. Well, it was, and then it started draining. And you think, why didn't they plug it? No, and it's drained quite a bit. But in the movie, you get to see what that looked like.
Speaking with Scott Washington, History Matters, we've got time for one more. What do you
got? Well, here is one talking about the influence of history, and this guy lost his head because of it. And it's Louis the 16th of France, born in 1754 on this date, August 23rd. He gets beheaded in 1792, but here's where we are still dealing with something from back then. As a favor to Marie Antoinette, he decreed that all handkerchiefs should be square. And that's why they are square today.
They had a weird relationship, those two.
And it's like, I don't think it had anything to do with losing his head, but just like, of all the things that would continue because of a decree issued by Louis the 16th, that's why we have those square handkerchiefs. Now,
honey, what
bizarre.
Do you want for Christmas? I don't want anything. No, come on, just one thing. Well, all right, if you're going to ask me for one request.
I'd like one of those Louis the 16th handkerchiefs. That would be really great.
I would like all handkerchiefs to be square. You want what? I was thinking I don't know, a trip to Nice or something. All handkerchiefs to be square. Okay.
It's these little moments that make history fun. and why it matters, because we say otherwise we'd be still saying, why is it like this? And it has to do with Louis the 16th in the 18th century. As a favor.
If you ever wondered,
and I'm sure you do, and that's probably a nice counterbalance to everything that's been going on this week. Like, oh, well, finally, we've made sense of the
square
world.
Square handkerchiefs. Yeah. All right. That's History Matters for this week. Scott Washington, as always, thank you so much.
You too.